This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. When President Joe Biden addressed the American public from the Oval Office on October 19th, he made the case for renewed aid to Israel by saying that it was vital to national security and that, quote, American leadership is what holds the world together. He gave his remarks ahead of a request to Congress for more than $105 billion in supplemental military aid to Ukraine and Israel. So far, Israel has killed more than 4,000 people in Gaza, including hundreds of Palestinian children. Writing for the National Priorities Project, Lindsay Koshgarian says, quote, in the face of massive suffering in Gaza and disregard for international law by the Israeli government, the U.S. must not provide additional military aid or weapons that would cause more deaths. Lindsay Koshgarian is program director of the National Priorities Project, where she oversees nationalpriorities.org. Her work on the federal budget includes analysis of the federal budget process and politics, military spending, and specifically how federal budget choices for different spending priorities and taxation interact. She's been one of my go-to guests for many years when we look at military spending, and she joins us again. Welcome back, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, when we talk about the supplemental aid to Israel, this is on top of what the U.S. routinely gives to Israel. How do you explain it in context? Isn't the U.S. the largest funder of the Israeli military?
The U.S. is the largest outside funder of the Israeli military. And for many years, until the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Israel was the top recipient of military aid from the United States. So it's a relationship that goes back a long time. And the U.S. is a very significant funder of the Israeli military.
So let's actually take a listen to what President Biden specifically said. I want to play a short excerpt of what he said last Thursday when he explained why he thought it was justified for the U.S. to send this money, American tax dollars, both to Ukraine and Israel.
I know these conflicts can seem far away. And it's natural to ask, why does this matter to America? So let me share with you why making sure Israel and Ukraine succeed is vital for America's national security. You know, history has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos and death and more destruction. They keep going, and the cost and the threats to America and the world keep rising. American leadership is what holds the world together. American alliances are what keep us, America, safe. American values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. To put all that at risk, if we walk away from Ukraine, if we turn our backs on Israel, it's just not worth it. That's why tomorrow I'm going to send to Congress an urgent budget request to fund America's national security needs, to support our critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine. It's a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations.
And that is President Biden, October 19th, from the White House, actually a rare address from the Oval Office. He was trying very hard to make the case to the American public that our investment, if you will, in aiding Israel and Ukraine would pay dividends. And do you think, Lindsay, that he understood that it's a hard sell for the public to see why we're sending all this money there?
I think that he may understand that it's a hard sell. One thing that's significant about that is that public opinion on Israel in particular and U.S. assistance to Israel has changed significantly over years. And of course, President Biden has been at this and watching this situation for decades. And I'm not sure that he fully appreciates where American public sentiment is on this right now. We have polling that shows that a slim majority, but a majority of the U.S. public does not support further aid, wants a ceasefire. And you know, just to kind of bring this back to what this is all really about, and what we're supposed to be concerned about is the security of civilians, and whether Israeli civilians or Palestinian civilians, the reason that more military aid for Israel is unpopular right now, and the reason why we need to be calling for a ceasefire first and foremost instead of providing additional aid is because there is unprecedented suffering of civilians going on. This whole last couple of weeks began with suffering of Israeli civilians, and the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza now is just mounting day by day. And so what I think President Biden isn't accounting for is the extent to which the US public is seeing that suffering of Palestinians and understanding that it is not an appropriate or moral response to the suffering of Israeli civilians.
So Biden wants to equate U.S. military aid to Israel with keeping civilians safe, but it seems as though it's doing the opposite.
That's right. And of course, that comes with a whole territory of prioritizing, you know, civilians of one nationality above civilians of another nationality. And that's not what we should be doing right now. The suffering in Gaza is just horrific. Israel's response to the horrible attacks of October 7th has been against international law. They have cut off food and water and electricity to civilians. That means that hospitals can't operate. It means that people don't have, obviously, the basic necessities of life, food and water. They have required 1 million Gazans to relocate, instructed them to relocate from northern Gaza to southern Gaza, and not given them any promise that they'll be able to return to their homes, and not giving them any promise of actual safety if they do relocate to southern Gaza, which is under daily bombardment, just to a slightly lesser extent than northern Gaza. So there is, you know, the Israeli government is breaking international law left and right. We have U.S. domestic laws against providing military aid to human rights, to regimes that are abusing human rights, which is what's happening right now in Gaza. And so President Biden wants us to see one part of this, but we are seeing the whole of it. And like I said, the majority of the US public does not want this to continue, does not want to continue seeing the level of suffering that is happening right now for people in Gaza.
Does U.S. military aid to Israel, whether ongoing or this supplemental request, come with any strings attached that you can have this money, but you can't use it to violate human rights?
So the U.S. does have laws in place that should mean that there are strings attached to all military aid to any country. Like I just referred to, we have laws in place, the Leahy laws, that are supposed to stop the provision of military aid in cases of human rights abuses. But those laws just don't have enough teeth. They're not enforced enough. The appropriate avenues in the U.S. government for that recognition to happen, that there are human rights abuses and violations of international law happening, those avenues are not working as they should. There, that recognition is not happening. And as we saw, a State Department official resign last week in protest of that. So there are those protections supposedly in place, but they are not operating. And so what we need to do is we need to have a popular resistance and call for more accountability for the United States government, that we won't send weapons in cases when they're extremely likely to be used in violation of international law.
So there are separately laws that have strings attached, but and that condition military aid, but they're not attached to each specific request. Now, when we look at what President Biden has requested from Congress to pass the supplemental military budget, a lot of it is going to Ukraine. Some of it is going to Israel. Some of it is going to U.S. border enforcement, immigration enforcement at the border. Some of it is ostensibly going toward aid for Palestinians in Gaza. What do the numbers mean for when you look at the numbers? And of course, hard budgetary figures reflect actual priorities, no matter how the president, who's basically a salesperson, is spinning it to the U.S. public, the amount of money attached to each line item is what tells us what our priorities are. Given that, can you tell what the priorities are for the Biden administration with the supplemental budget request?
Yes. So looking at sheer numbers, the largest segment of this aid by far, about $60 billion, it would be for Ukraine. And of course, the U.S. has been providing both military and non-military aid to Ukraine by the tens of billions of dollars, now well over $100 billion since the Russian invasion began. So this would significantly add to that. If you, by the sheer numbers, that would be the highest priority. And I do believe that's a very high priority for the administration. And one reason that they've packaged these things together very likely is to sweeten the deal a bit for what we know are some opponents of further Ukraine aid, especially on the right in Congress. But those who are opposed to Ukraine aid are far more likely to be in support of aid for Israel. Or, as you mentioned, there are also about $14 billion in immigration and border funds, including about $7 billion that would go toward the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and Customs and Border Protections, including the Border Patrol. So there would be more border agents, more deportations, more detentions, and that accounts for a part of this too. The packaging of it all together really does speak to kind of the preferred militarism of the left and the preferred militarism of the right trying to come together in one package that I think the administration believes could pass Congress. But there are also additional military funds that would go toward the U.S. anti-China policies and toward increasing militarism in the Indo-Pacific region, and specifically, again, anti-China funding. So all of those things are kind of coming together under one big umbrella of militarism. But what that also means is that this is a $100 billion plus package that the administration is looking to move forward, all of which almost is a militarism. And you did refer to the humanitarian aid for Palestinians, which is included in this package, but that's an extremely small amount. It's less than $1 billion. It's a very, very small portion of the total. And so what we're really looking at is this big umbrella of providing additional funds for militarism. And I just want to point out that the context for that proposal is also a context where we have a government that's only funded in this country until November 17th. If we don't get additional funding for the government after that, all kinds of terrible things will happen. People will lose benefits. People will lose paychecks. It will cause serious suffering for the lowest income people in this country. And so the fact that the administration is looking to move forward all of these conveniently aligned pieces of military spending at a time when we don't even have funding for our own U.S. government past November 17th is, I think, really is really objectionable, that they would look to secure all of this funding, much of which will make life worse for immigrants, will make life more difficult for people looking to come into this country, will make life more difficult for Palestinians suffering in Gaza, at the same time that we don't even have funds to support people who are living in this country.
Well, I appreciate you bringing in spending priorities domestically, comparing them to what we spend on military aid, because that is, of course, often the important comparison to be made when we think about how much money gets poured into essentially a machine that is destructive, which and operates abroad, or in this particular case also at the border, compared to the things that are there to ensure well-being of ordinary people. We just have been having this, or in the midst of this bizarre congressional fight over House Speaker from the GOP. And in the midst of that fight, there were mentions made of how the real priorities of the GOP are to ensure that there are cuts to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. I believe it was Jim Jordan was touted as being the person brave enough by one of his colleagues to really lead such cuts. But the right doesn't have a problem with sending money to Israel. They have a problem with sending money to Ukraine. The left, which I use that term loosely, I just say Democrats, love the idea of funding both Ukraine and Israel. So in the end, where does that leave the American public? How does spending on the military affect domestic spending for the things we actually need, for adapting to climate change, etc., for pushing renewable energy, you know, all of the things that actually keep human beings safe? Does taking money out of one pot ensure that the other pot, the more important pot, is underfunded?
There's definitely a pressure there. And I want to be clear about what those pots are. One pot is militarism. It's, you know, sending aid for weapons to Israel, aid for weapons to Ukraine, sending, you know, further militarizing the Indo-Pacific, all of those things, further militarizing our southern border. It's not that we can't afford to be involved in the world. The U.S. owes it to the world, and there are many things that we should be doing, like investing more in the Green Climate Fund. That's the international pot of money for lower income countries who are suffering from the effects of climate change. And there are many things like that that we should be doing and can be doing and that we can afford to do. The U.S. has tremendous resources as a country. So it's not a question of funding for here versus funding for there. It's a question of funding for violence and force as solutions versus funding for humanitarian solutions and humanitarian needs. And of course, climate change is a big, important one of those. But what we see in our politics in our own country is, of course, is that we do see people pitting those things against each other. We do see, you know, mostly in the Republican Party, we see support for funding the military and for cutting spending for domestic needs. And then in the Democratic Party, we see support for funding both of those things. But it never is the military solutions that are really on the chopping block. One thing I do want to note is that there is a really important resolution right now sponsored by Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush, and now co-sponsored by at least, I think, about 20 other members of Congress, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. And that so there are voices even from within Congress that are looking for a different set of priorities. And for those of us on the outside who are looking for a better world and for better funding priorities, it's important to see those places where there are real voices in Congress also calling for the same things.
I appreciate you bringing that up because we really are seeing a change, at least in rhetoric, when Congress becomes slightly more racially representative, more representative of younger Americans, and you know, has been opened up to people who are not seasoned politicians, as we see the makeup of at least the House of Representatives slowly, far too slowly, changing. We see the discussions and the debates changing. Whether that actually trickles into votes, whether there's enough power in the Congressional Progressive Caucus, for example, to affect change is another question altogether. Finally, very quickly, Lindsay, where can people find out more about the work that you do with the National Priorities Project so that they can get those numbers themselves, you know, to make the case, to talk about our financial priorities?
You can find all of our work at www.nationalpriorities.org.
And we'll post that from our website. Lindsay Kashkarian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Lindsay Kashkarian, Program Director of the National Priorities Project, where she oversees nationalpriorities.org. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.